Thank you very much. Such a pleasure to be with such an energetic crowd on a Sunday morning. I mean, how can the week start any better than this? Well, I'm sure that we've all heard about the law of attraction. How many people are familiar with that? Okay, so that's about manifestation. And we all know it has a pretty old pedigree, long before the DVD came out. And so as somebody who's always been a teacher of manifestation principles, I realized that the law of attraction is important, but it's not enough. And that's what the book that I wrote is about, and that's what I want to talk about today. What it takes is where the rubber meets the road is decision making. And timing is a very special kind of decision. And we've all heard the expression, timing is everything. To have good timing is to be successful. You know how to buy low, you know how to sell high, you know how to make the right moves at the right time. But that doesn't mean it's easy. And today we're going to take a look at what that is and how we can learn to improve on that. And I'm going to be talking about things that are in my book, Great Decisions, Perfect Timing, Cultivating Intuitive Intelligence. Now, as Britt said, my story started when I was in the stage one of life, the student stage, and I had a couple of fascinations. And the first thing that really grabbed me as an adult, when I was 19 years old, I was introduced to the I Ching. The I Ching is an ancient Chinese oracle system. It's the oldest book in the world. And it's in the Chinese translation is Book of Changes. So it's the original change management system. And this girl, I was a student at Cal Berkeley, and this girl wanted to show me this thing, and I was kind of just fooling around, and I was way more interested in her than any fortune-telling system. And so she told me to come up with a question and to cast the coins, and so I said, all right, okay. So I wrote down something that had no meaning for me, and you know, being kind of a smart aleck, because when you're 19, that's how you get girls, or at least that's what you think is the way to get girls. And so I was kind of making fun of the whole thing. And lo and behold, I got back for my very first I Ching reading, hexagram number 4, which is entitled Youthful Folly. And it describes the student who lacks respect for the teacher. And I thought, oh, wow, that was like a slap across the face. Let me try that again. So this time, I asked another question I didn't really care about just to get the process going, and this time I was testing it. And I got a reading back that had the words, questioning the sincerity of the seeker. I thought, oh my God, I'm testing it, now it's testing me. So that began my love affair with the I Ching and with divination in general. And in my entire, in my adult life, I've always used the I Ching as my favorite form of that, as a way to inform my decision-making, as a way to stimulate my intuition, and we'll get to that in a minute. Then there was another fascination that happened during stage one for me, which was software. And I had a friend who worked at a software center. This is back in the early 70s, and nobody knew what software was, and that computer would take up, you know, a quarter of this room, and it was called a mini computer. And it had it had way less power than my iPhone has right now. But we would go in there in the middle of the night, my friend was a programmer there, and there was a little screen about the size of an oscilloscope, and he had gotten some software from MIT for this mini computer, and he had a couple of joysticks, and we'd play this little game called Space War. We'd smoke some pot, and we'd commandeer this humongous computer to play this little game. Now, I'm not much of a gamer, but that fascinated me. The phenomenon of software fascinated me. The idea that somebody could write some code and deliver an interactive experience. And I had visions of multimedia in 1973. I thought, wow, what could be done with this for education? What could be done with this for spirituality? And so I wanted a job in software, and I got one as a secretary. Because I dropped out of college, I didn't have any credentials, but I could type. So I started my career in software as a secretary. And then I learned how to handle all the marketing and sales for that place, and I became a software marketing specialist, which I did. the next 15 years. 15 years later, I was the vice president of a high-tech company. Like Britt said, I had security. I was a growing field. I was making a lot of money, but I wasn't happy. And I was the workplace was horrible. The boss made Steve Jobs look like a really easy guy to work for. And I found myself using the I Ching more often than usual. Now, I like to say these are great tools, but only use them if you have a problem that logic can't handle. Logic's a pretty good tool for a lot of minor problems, but there's whole realms of life that logic can't handle, like relationships, timing, negotiating, office politics. So I found myself using the I Ching to the point where I was actually bringing it to work to try to maintain balance because I didn't want to leave my job. There was a shortage of those kind of jobs in Oregon at the time. This was in the late 80s. And so one day a light bulb went off and I thought, God, I wish I could do this on my computer. And I had all these flashbacks of all of my dreams about multimedia software and the potentials, et cetera. Now, this was still 5 years before CD-ROMs were invented. But I thought, God, I wonder if I could do, I wish I could do the I Ching on the computer. I could have art, I could make it look like a Japanese garden. You know, I had all these kind of, I got really inspired by the intersection of two fascinations, my fascination with the I Ching and my fascination with software, both of which came in my 20s, or in my college days, and that's when my book points out that we need to really pay attention. What fascinated you during stage one? So stage two, which is the builder-provider stage, I had discovered what I was interested in, I had discovered what I was good at, and so I worked really hard at it to develop mastery in marketing software. And I did very well, and I ended up inventing divination software completely out of love, and it was the most harebrained business idea ever. I Ching software in 1988 wasn't exactly a stroke of genius as far as product ideas went, because people who knew what the I Ching was didn't buy software. In fact, they didn't even like computers. And people who bought software were engineers and accountants, and they didn't know what the I Ching was, and they could care less. But I was a direct marketing specialist, and so I would do these direct mail campaigns that say, successful millionaires know how to make the right moves at the right time. Now you can too. And I sold a bunch of them to those engineers and accountants who didn't really know what they were getting, but they got it, and it turned out it was one of the first multimedia titles. It would take a few floppy disks to load all the art, and they thought it was cute, and so they didn't send it back. So I got about 10,000 sales out of that, and then went on from there. So the book, as Britt said, it's the story of a man who leaves security and money in order to find meaning in his work. And the beautiful thing is it's one of those do what you love and the money will follow stories, because I ended up adding tarot, do-it-yourself tarot cards, and then I added astrology, and then I got a deal with AOL, and became AOL Horoscopes, and it became the largest astrology site in the world, and I ended up selling it for millions of dollars and started a nonprofit, which is what I do now. So what I realized in looking back at that is how much help I got from the I Ching and how important the realm of decision making was to my success. And then I realized that decision-making really is the most high-leverage human activity there is. It's the thing that we pay CEOs a fortune to do. It's what we give politicians a lot of power to do for the collective good. Well, hey, every one of us is the CEO of our own life. I don't care if you're working for somebody else or if you're working for a large corporation. You are working for yourself. And the decisions that you make have everything to do with how well you're going to do. And yet, decisions are harder to make than ever because we're bombarded with information and with noise, and it's very difficult these days to get a clear enough head to make decisions. And the big decisions, which is what my book is about, which I call the visionary decisions, are intuitive. They have to be led by intuition. Now, and that's not something that we're really, really good at. And I like to use an analogy in terms of explaining intuition, and this is in the book, because there's a part two of the book is how to awaken the intuition. If you think of the palm of your hand as your mind, and the five fingers as the five senses, they're like gigantic antenna that are bringing in signals and information. And there's a lot of noise going on, as we all know, being bombarded all the time. Well, imagine there's a dinky little sixth finger, tiny little appendage. That's been called the sixth sense, and that's the intuition. Now, that's calibrated to a very quiet signal, very subtle frequency. Sort of like trying to tune in a ham radio, and you want to get Papua New Guinea, and there's all kinds of noise coming from places a lot closer. There's a lot of static on the line. So it's very difficult to dial that in. And the same thing is true with intuition. We have to sort of damp down all the noise of the five senses. But we have other obstacles to intuitive receptivity. There's I like to think of them as cement containment domes that can block signals like strong feelings, fears, craving, addictions. These kind of things can really be distracting. We can become obsessive, and they can block the intuitive perception. And also, there's the internal clattering of the mind itself, which is almost incessant for most of us. And what we have to do in order to activate intuition is we got to quiet that stuff down. And so there are exercises in the book on how to apply mindfulness to intuitive receptivity, because we need it now more than ever. The decisions we make are so critical, especially on a global level, and the problems that we're facing. We have to start making better decisions. Now, even in your own personal life, if you start making even slightly better decisions, they're going to get easier to make. And if you make bad decisions or poor decisions, those are going to get easier to make until your freedom is so limited you end up in jail or dead or worse. You go to hell for eternity. Oh, wait, I don't know. So it's very important that we learn how to make decisions. And timing is a decision. Now, one of the things that helps us develop the intuition is an understanding of synchronicity. Synchronicity is that principle that Carl Jung developed. He was inspired by the I Ching, by the way, to discover it. And synchronicity was what I called my first product back in 1989, which was the first I Ching software. Well, what is synchronicity? Carl Jung called it a meaningful coincidence. And basically, you can think of it as the slogan, there are no accidents, or everything happens for a reason. And so it means that things are related in time as well as in space. Now, in Western science, we understand that things are related on a material level, that things are related in space, but we don't even take timing into account. If you do a controlled experiment on Tuesday morning and you do that same experiment on Sunday night, you naturally expect it to come out exactly the same. We factor time out of the equation altogether. We don't give it any import at all. Well, that's because we're trying to answer the question, what are things made of? We want to take things apart and put them back together in a new combination and invent something. And we've done a lot of marvelous things with that scientific method. But the ancient sages in China, they were asking a different question. They were asking the question, what goes together in time? They wanted to know when. They wanted to answer the when question. They wanted to know, when's the best time to launch a campaign? When's the best time to have a wedding? You know, what kinds of things go together in time? And so they were very conscious of the synchronicity principle. And so they invented the I Ching for the emperor, you know, 3,000 years ago, as a tool to stimulate the intuition and improve timing. And basically, the I Ching consists of archetypes and operated on by the synchronicity principle, just like tarot cards. Tarot cards, 78 archetypes operated on by synchronicity. What's the synchronicity? Well, which is the card that you happen to pull at that particular moment while you were thinking about XYZ? That's the synchronicity. And the set of archetypes, all the archetypes are inside of us. There's exercises in the book on how to channel archetypes. Not just wait to see what comes up using divination. You can actually call on archetypes just like we've done today. We called on the archetype of creative power. We called on the archetype of love, that God is an archetype. So we can learn how to channel archetypes that are good for decision-making, like the sovereign, which is the king or the queen, like the warrior, if we need to defend the boundaries. And so I talk about that in the book, the particular ones that are optimized for decision making. And then what it really comes down to, and towards the end of the book, we talk about execution. So you can't just attract things. It's not like you can obsess on, you just want something really, really bad, and you obsess on it, and it's going to come to you, like in the movie The Secret. That's not going to work. You're going to have to actually make some decisions and make some effort, and then you're going to have to execute those decisions, and you're going to have to execute those decisions with good timing. Like when I started divination software in 1989, I was 10 years ahead of my time. All of my friends thought I was crazy. All of my software peers thought I was crazy. Why are you doing this? And I said, well, my motto is, wherever God drags me, I will follow. It's like, I was so fascinated, I had to do it, and I spent my entire life savings to create a prototype and threw caution to the wind and started a company without considering business plans or any of this other stuff, and I stuck to it. So my timing was a little bit off, but luckily I was still holding the vision 10 years later when the internet and the World Wide Web came around and email. Can you imagine? Here I am, a direct marketing specialist doing direct mail in the 80s, and along comes email and websites. This is a direct marketer's wet dream. I was like right in position to take advantage of those technologies at the right time. And so the timing was good then. And so to understand timing is to understand it as a decision. And it answers the second question of any decision that's going to be effective, and that's the execution question. It's the when question. The first question is, what is the best next move I could make? You could think of a game of chess where you've got a number of viable moves, or a game of Go where you have even more equally good moves. And so you make a decision, what's the best next move to make? And maybe you're thinking a few moves ahead. And so then the when question is, and when should I make it? When should I pull the trigger? That's the timing decision. And the timing decision, my friends, is 100% intuitive. The what question, you can bring logic to bear. You can sort things, you can sift things, you can weigh things. And I have some exercises in there on how to do that in a simple way, much simpler than pros and cons. But at the end of the day, the big decisions, which I call the visionary decisions, rely on intuition being in the lead, with logic helping, not the other way around. And the timing decision is almost entirely intuitive. And how do we get good at that? We get good at that by clearing some space for intuition, number one, and number two, by becoming better at all the decisions we make, particularly the ones that involve intuition. Because if you get better at all of your decision making, your timing is going to improve. It's just a decision. So that's the secret of perfect timing, is learning how to cultivate intuition. That's the subtitle of the book, Cultivating Intuitive Intelligence, learning how to call it forth when you need it the most, and learning how to get out of the way and let it operate, because there's no way you can force it. There's no formula that you can do to force intuition to happen. And once we develop this skill, we can enter into a kind of a more magical life, because I call it chapter 12 in the book. The final chapter is about living the synchronistic lifestyle. And this is where little miracles start to happen. And they're happening all the time. Synchronicity is perfect timing. Everything is happening. It's meant to happen. It's supposed to happen. We're the ones that are out of sync. And that's all in our heads. Everything is unfolding perfectly according to plan. We don't know what the plan is, perhaps. Everything's happening for a reason. Maybe we don't know what the reason is. Maybe we won't know for a couple of years. How many people have ever heard people bemoan their fate? Why is this happening to me? And at the end of the day, I say, I don't know. And it doesn't matter. What matters is that change is happening, and you're called upon to respond to it. The music is playing, and you're called upon to dance to the tune. That's timing. That's rhythm. And that's the best that we can do. And when we're living the synchronistic lifestyle, we start to notice all of the little miracles, all of the little happenstances, all of the meaningful coincidences that we could have previously, our ego would have just dismissed. Just a coincidence. Well, when you understand synchronicity and you understand and you're in touch and you've got the capacity of intuition empowered, then you start living a joyous, more magical life and stuff starts happening. Manifestation starts happening. I mean, I can't even believe what happened to me. You know, I was never trying to make a lot of money. I left. I was making great money. And I left because my dream was two words, creative freedom. That was my dream. I didn't want to work for an engineer anymore. I wanted to do something that was meaningful for me. I just wanted to make a living doing something that I cared about. And I wasn't really expecting I Ching software to ever amount to anything financially, but I had a vision, and the money came anyway. So to sum it up, perfect timing is synchronicity. Cultivating intuition is the way to get in harmony with synchronicity that's happening all the time. And one final aphorism and word of advice is to take the risks that grow you, not just the ones that your ego is all excited about. Take the risks that grow you. So, thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you. I so appreciate that information. I love the two-pronged aspect of practicality in unity. Part of it is having that practical information, continuing to collect the tools for our own individual personal toolboxes, so we have access to those. So I'm so grateful for that information. And of course, the second aspect of that practicality is the practicing of the principles, the practicing your own spiritual practice, your spiritual gym workouts. And one of those is meditation. So let's prepare to go within and do just that. Take a breath. Breathing is so good. It's so important. It is so necessary, and it is always free. And we are so blessed to remember how blessed we are. And we remember that very thing as we prepare to go deeper into that space of knowing, I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I have. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. I am so blessed for all that I am. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that I am. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful. I am so blessed for all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful for all that God is. I am so blessed. I am so blessed. I am so grateful.
And as you sit and allow the chair to support you and relax your muscles and have your feet flat on the floor and free your laps if you can, and breathe in and breathe out in that space of knowing that we are truly blessed. As we take another cleansing breath, feeling and knowing that every cell of our being is infused with life, divine life. And this morning in our affirmation together, we knew that we see clearly through the eyes of God. And scripture tells us that God is love. God is love. So seeing through the eyes of God is seeing through the eyes of love. Each of us is divinely created in the image and likeness of the divine love that created us. So we in turn are love. That is the truth of what we are, spiritual beings. It doesn't say that God is loving. Scripture says God is love. That's love itself. And when the world seems to be revolving around in and through so much that seems to not be love, our senses can sometimes perhaps fool us into thinking that, hey, that's just the way it is. But what a gift and a blessing it is to know our truth. The divine idea of love always is. That spirit never changes. It is unchanging, immutable. And so whenever incidences occur in our lives, we don't see love anywhere around, or we don't feel the activity of love in our lives. The gift is it's temporary. Perhaps it's calling us to look at something deep within ourselves, to raise our level of awareness, to experience whatever it is we're experiencing, and know that, yes, the event happened, the occurrence happened, but what is my response to it? What is the action that it leads me to take? And through the gift and our toolboxes filled with prayer, affirmative prayer, speaking truth, knowing what already is, calling it into being, using our power, our faculties, so that at any moment when we don't necessarily feel like love, we can call on that power. We can affirm it. We can pray and move our feet and act as if, and know that in truth, the core of our very being is divine love itself. And through the power of remembering, when we know our truth and speak our truth, and sometimes be willing to know the truth that we are love, that will allow us to take one step at a time. So as we prepare to go into the silence, remember, God is love. We are created in that image and likeness, and we are love itself. And for a moment, know that from the very depth of your being, that you are love. I am love. And love is, as we move into the silence. And take a breath. And exhale. And when you breathe in this time, just know you're breathing in life, breathing in love. See yourself being the love that you are, being love in expression. Know that this universe conspires in your favor. Know that love never ends, never dies. We cannot be separated from it. We cannot be separated from the love that we are. We cannot be separated from spirit. We are one. So as we breathe in one last time and find ourselves back in symphony space, knowing that there is nothing, no one, no circumstance that can separate us from the love that God is, from the love that we are. And from a deep space of gratitude, we say thank you, thank you, thank you for knowing that we are love, and so it is.